We are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change, and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests, or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Today's show features the multi-talented Molly Garber. I wanted to interview her about her work doing therapy, but turns out she's a storyteller and a musician. We start with the interview, then a song by Orchard, which features her as a singer, Shoe Drop, then her story, then a tune by Slim Gaylord, Boink Boink, and wrap up the show with a tune by Jacob Loeb, Remedy. Mystic Pete Chronicles, stay tuned! It is April 2nd, 2023. Mystic Pete here with Molly Garber, LCSW. You can be found at mollygarbertherapy.com. And I thought this would be a very interesting person to put on my radio show. And so here you are in studio, and you're a therapist. We're going to, like, try to just talk about therapy and nothing else, because it says therapist and funny person. We're not going to, no humor.
No, no laughing.
Serious here.
Absolutely.
Because therapy, okay, well.
Yeah.
Say something. Therapy. No, you thought I was going to say something funny. Hi, Molly. Let me let you introduce yourself.
Okay. Hi, Pete. Hello, world. My name is Molly Garber. Licensed clinical social worker, trauma therapist, EMDR therapist, funny person, sometimes.
It says that, well, that's so wonderful that you see a place for humor, just being yourself in also a therapeutic context. Well, just talk generally about what you're doing and how you're helping people.
The short answer is I'm a private practice therapist, and I'm doing EMDR, which is a special kind of trauma therapy. It's a somatic trauma therapy. And meeting with people who range in ages, range in difficulties, and helping them work through stuff with really the basis of my work is showing up with humility. Showing up as, I'm not above you. We are walking this together. We're walking your healing together. So that's kind of the basis. That's a simple basis.
Beautiful. And I thought maybe a little bit of an orientation for this interview is talk about situations people are encountering in life that they could use a little guidance about. Like, traumatic situations that happen all the time, maybe in a minor level. I don't know if we want to get into the big stuff, but we can too. Like, for instance, one of your posts is about escalation. Why don't we start there?
Sure.
So if somebody says something I don't like, I shouldn't start like yelling at them?
I mean, if you want to.
Can I just blame them?
If you want to blow it up, go for it.
Because I like to just stomp out and slam the door.
Right.
That's my preference.
Right, right, right. Well, I would suggest, encourage you not to do that, Pete. But also, free will is a thing.
Okay.
So the escalation, I mean, what I bring up is I've just noticed when I'm working with couples, just normal talk therapy, couples therapy, it's typically two people that come in. Some are in polyamorous relationships, some are in monogamous relationships, queer, straight, non-binary, whatever it is, there are always two sides. If there are two people in the room, there are two sides. Person one has a very strong opinion about the reality of a situation, and person two has their own reality of that situation.
Mm.
But there's always that elephant in the room, which is the third side. Hmm. There's always three sides. And that third side is the reality of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
That's nearly impossible to see because we all show up with... we all show up with our own lens. And that lens is made up of where you come from, your family history, what you've been through, mm-hmm. your relationship history, your attachment style, all these different things are going to color how you look at a situation.
I see what you're saying. And that third perspective, well, that's independent reality.
Yeah.
And I think people always think their perspective is independent reality, but yeah. In a couple, it's a closed system. There's no outside judge there saying, oh no, you were right. There's no actual person there. Even the therapist probably isn't gonna take sides. What reality is, that's an interesting point. But it's a closed system. All it is my opinion and your opinion.
Right.
So what bridges that chasm?
Empathy. Empathy. It's so... Empathy and curiosity. If you can show up to conflict, if you can show up to conversation with curiosity, with this humility of, I don't know everything, even though, you know, Pete, you know I know everything.
Well, you.
I know everything.
I get it.
Right.
I'm there.
Yeah.
Molly.
Exactly. So, you know, you show up and you know that you don't know everything. You need to meet conflict with curiosity and empathy, because if you're walking into conflict and you think you're right and it's your way or the highway, it's not going to go over well, because that's going to make the other person feel invalidated. That's going to cause escalation, because then you're both going to want to start proving your points to each other. It'll just be a battle.
Mm. I used to work in family law, and I was working for a female attorney, and there was a lot of women clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a paralegal and, you know, had a lot of the client contact. And I would hear these stories about their horrible husbands. They're just these monsters.
Yeah.
And I'd be very sympathetic. That was my job to listen and take down all the information. At some point or other, a deposition would come along, or court, and I would meet the husband, and I'd go, I'd be friends with this dude.
Right.
Like
right.
Why? Oh, I'm, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, my ex-boyfriend is the worst person on the planet.
Yeah. Well, we've heard that.
You
but
know?
That's independently verifiable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, but I also see, like, couples, there's, like, people who don't know how to solve problems.
Yeah.
Of which you can explain how to do in a minute. But there's, like... Well, I didn't like it when you left your thing in the drain. You know, like there's the complaint, and then and then there's the blame, or you did this, and it starts escalating.
Yeah.
But at some point, it's like the gloves come off. I mean, not all the time, but sometimes in couples that are really having a hard time.
Yeah.
When things get bad, you cross that line. Now I can do anything I want.
Yes.
Because like there's no rules anymore.
Right.
And it's just like I can get as mean and ugly and perhaps violent as I want because you did that. And that line is at different places for different couples at different times.
Absolutely.
But, and, I mean, you see this in politics too. Okay, you did this? Now anything, we can do the worst back to you.
Right. I mean, you're bringing up politics here, which we're in an explosive time. People are explosive right now politically. I mean, it has been this way, but now it's whatever. We can get into politics later. But my thought on, and again, I'm framing this as my thought because this is just my perspective. I could not be where I am. I could not be who I am if I wasn't open to being wrong or learning a different perspective. So you'll hear me frame things as my perspective in this position is when you are, say, and it could be a couple, it could be a friendship, it could be, I mean, it's anyone you're interacting with.
Yeah, right. Business, right.
Exactly.
Crossing that line.
Exactly.
Now, I can do anything.
Exactly. But when you are in any sort of relationship with somebody, it will not be successful, in my opinion, if you do not have a willingness to work on yourself. Okay. So people enter into relationships and think, oh, I'm in a relationship now. But and that's a business partnership, a friendship, whatever it may be. But if two people don't enter into a dynamic with willingness to grow and learn and work on themselves, you're going to have a lot of those explosive moments that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because resentment is heightened. I mean, if somebody thinks that the sink should be bleached 3 times a day... and you don't do it once, that's a check on their resentment list. Then you don't do it twice, there's another check. And that just starts to boil.
Mm.
It's just bubbling. So one day you may be walking in the kitchen and they notice you don't bleach the sink and it's like a nuclear bomb goes off emotionally to them.
It's their own reality, what's important to them.
Exactly.
And the other person may not be agreeing with that reality or validating it. So then let's talk about some of the mechanics of problem solving. You talked about empathy.
Yeah.
What are some of the real daily things we can do to sort some of this stuff out?
I mean, it's such a complex question, but again, it leads me back to humility.
Mm-hmm.
Because empathy, if you're showing up with empathy, what is empathy? I'm very much into layman's terms of empathy is essentially putting yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Yeah.
And so when I worked with children with the Pasadena Unified School District, they had me do empathy presentations with the second graders.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I described it was I brought in a cotton ball and I brought in a piece of sandpaper and passed one of each around to every child.
Mm-hmm.
And explained that not showing empathy is when you use sandpaper words.
No.
But when you use empathy, you use cotton ball words, softer words.
Oh, I see. Particularly when there's a problem.
Correct.
Like, don't escalate, don't inflame it.
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And so when somebody is coming to you and saying, I'm pissed that you didn't bleach my sink, if I use a sandpaper word and say, well, you're crazy for wanting me to bleach a sink 3 days a week or 3 times a day or whatever I said, it's going to escalate. But if I use a cotton ball word and say, you know, I really didn't realize how much that meant to you.
And I
take accountability. I'm sorry that I didn't realize it sooner.
In other words, you're validating their point of view, no yes. matter how much it doesn't make sense to you or you disagree. Yes. Like, their reality is their reality. And if yes. you can validate it, it really helps to
yes.
calm things down.
Yes. Which actually is a really great segue into normalizing. Mm. That's another tool. That's another tool that can be used to problem solve, is when you're telling somebody that, when you're validating them, as you said, it's saying, okay, what you're feeling is normal.
Mm.
You're not crazy. Mm. It's normal that you feel it's important to bleach the sink 3 times a day.
Yeah, yeah.
That already allows a different type of energy into the conversation. Mm. It's you're safe here.
I see. And I think that's what I do wrong in most of my communication, because whenever anybody doesn't believe... agree with what I say. I
yeah.
say, oh, you're crazy.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
obviously
yeah, yeah. Of
distorted reality.
Of course.
They don't see what I say as a
yeah.
perfect embodiment of truth.
Well, you also have a law background, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so
that too.
You're trained.
It's authentic.
Yes.
Valid. So, Molly Garber, tell me about HALT. A very interesting post on your Instagram.
Yes.
HALT.
HALT. What did you like about it?
Well, it seemed like a very simple way to attenuate mm-hmm. feelings. Mm-hmm. I remember, I have a couple of grown kids. I know I look about 20.
Oh, but, I mean, yeah.
22.
20.
But I remember, like, we would, like, the whole family would break into these, like, crazy arguments right before dinner.
Mm.
At some point, you know, a little ways into the family, like 20 years later, I realized, uh-huh. look, let's just get food into everybody and then let's have the argument. Let's see how important it is.
Yes. Brilliant. And you didn't even know about HALT yet.
No, but okay. I figured out that when people are hungry, we all just become monsters.
Well, it's because you're brilliant, Pete. We know this. Anyways, okay. Yes, HALT. HALT is amazing, and I can't take credit for it. HALT is actually an acronym that is that I learned from 12-step people.
Oh.
People in 12-step programs. And essentially everybody is cruising at a baseline. So you may have a normal baseline of, so zero is like totally like Rastafarian chill, right? Which might be you, Pete. 10 is highly, highly neurotic, angry, easily flustered.
Affect level. Totally. Super off the charts.
Totally. But if you are... So I'm at like a 3. I'm a neurotic Jewish woman who cares a lot about people, highly sensitive, that kind of thing. So what is your number?
I think when I was younger, probably a 6 or 7, but now like 2 or 3 most of the time.
Exactly.
But because I learned how to be safe and how to protect myself,
yeah.
how to have a really nice, quiet home, how to, like, yeah. if I feel my blood pressure going up, how to disengage. And like, unless I'm on stage or something and I'm using that excitement.
Sure.
But generally, I know how to manage myself.
Right. So... say you are noticing that blood pressure going up, or you are noticing that you're going above that 2 or a 3.
Mm.
That's when you use HALT, which is HALT. Are you hungry, angry, lonely, or tired? And sometimes I even like to add an S at the end of HALT, which is sick. If you are feeling physically sick. So, if you see yourself going above your baseline, HALT or HALTs?
Mm.
Am I hungry, angry, lonely, and or tired or sick? And before you do anything, address that first. And then see after that if an issue is still an issue for you, or if it's still bothering you.
Hungry,
angry, lonely, tired, or sick. Halts.
That's really brilliant and something people have to remember. If they're getting triggered, just check in with yourself. And if one of those things are happening, back off. Go for a walk around the block. Take a nap. Totally. Eat something. Yes. Take care of yourself. Yes. And then go pick up the argument and yell at your...
Yeah, yell at whoever you want after that, if you still feel like you need to.
Or insignificant other.
Yeah, of course, yes.
But like, I would even add, so sick is actually a thing, but sometimes it shows up like we're not dying of pneumonia and we can't breathe, but we have a little headache.
Exactly.
I mean, when I'm interviewing somebody, like if there's some like low-level thing, like it's very hard for them to concentrate.
Oh, yeah.
And even speak well.
Yes.
And then it goes into the issue of, well, I guess you'd call it ADHD or something, like mm-hmm. attention issues.
Yes.
Like a friend of mine comes over. I was wearing a plaid shirt. Mm-hmm. She couldn't talk to me. I'm going, what's going on with you?
Oh.
Your shirt. What's, like, I'm dismissing her. Like, what stop it.
You were dismissing her.
But this plaid pattern overwhelmed her visual cortex, and she couldn't relate to me. And I went, oh, yeah, well, I'm like that. If I smell strong perfume, it's like somebody beating a drum next to my ear.
I mean, you are touching on such an important thing, which is the senses. Us humans, we have visual senses, hearing senses, smell, taste, all these things that affect your nervous system. So some people are going to be more sensitive to sound. Some people are going to be more sensitive visually or to perfumes, like you're saying.
Mm.
And if your nervous system, if it's causing you any sort of stress or discomfort or confusion even, I mean, she couldn't pay attention to you. She couldn't talk to you.
Yeah.
So even if it was confusion, she's releasing cortisol in her brain, which is the stress hormone. It causes inflammation. It causes physical illness, creates stomach issues and all kinds of underlying physical health symptoms and problems.
So I'm just putting like the sick issue, like sick could mean a headache,
totally.
which is going to ruin your concentration,
totally.
Or even more into attention issues. Is that part of sickness? But right now you cannot focus and somebody's keeps talking louder and louder to you because you're not paying attention to them. And now it's already like in a confrontation.
Yes. And and this is such a good point that you're making, because sick, when I say sick, when I add sick on the end of halt, HALTS, what I'm referring to is physical discomfort of any kind.
Okay.
Because if somebody is physically uncomfortable, it's valid.
Yeah.
None of us have any place in telling somebody else that whatever they're feeling physically or emotionally is invalid.
I see.
Because it's obviously very real to them.
Yeah. I guess a side issue from that is I worked with drug addicts or people coming off of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing sound meditation with them. I played cello.
Amazing.
And it was very helpful. And sometimes music can help heal people in ways that maybe talk therapy can't get to sometimes.
Yes.
But then I went, these people have very interesting stories. So I started interviewing them for my radio shows, and I found some of the people who got into drugs did it to deal with their sensitivities. Like when they had these, whether it's sound or touch or whatever, something about life was overwhelming them, and then they would start medicating themselves to deal with this attention issue.
Yes.
And then that turned into a whole nother problem of addiction. But it was really a sensory issue.
Yes.
And nobody had a thought to like validate that or recognize that when they were growing up. Oh, like you're really sensitive to emotions or being around people or talking, like let's make, like be aware of that so you can self-manage.
Right.
they had no awareness of this issue. Yes. So, well, let's just take some Adderall or something
of
like that.
Of course.
And Xanax, and suddenly we're off that
right.
cliff.
Right, right. And this is such a great, I'm so glad you're bringing this up, because actually something that I was thinking about on the way over here was I was humming. And I remembered that humming is something that actually calms anxiety. And what it, the reason it calms anxiety is because it calms something called the vagus nerve.
Oh.
And the vagus nerve is, are the main nerves of the parasympathetic nervous system.
Oh.
So when you hum or when you take deep breaths, you are calming your vagus nerve, or this nerves, this set of nerves that creates panic for you. So you're bringing up cello healing, sound healing. Those people that are more sensitive to sound are probably going to be drawn to that type of healing, because it's speaking their language in terms of senses. And you also brought up substance use, which this is, reading about this stuff is so fascinating, because there are four main types of coping skills, coping strategies. But the two that I'm going to bring up are problem-focused coping strategies and emotion-focused coping strategies. So problem-focused coping strategies are typically people who, in the moment, take action to deal with what's happening as quickly as possible. And that's repression a lot of times. That's when people push down their emotions and say, I can't look at this and I can't deal with this right now, so I'm just going to push it down and pretend like it doesn't exist.
Oh, I see. Just sweep it under the rug. Denial.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. And people who grew up using problem, or even still do currently use problem-focused coping mechanisms, are more prone to substance use disorders.
Oh, interesting. So there is some real science behind it.
Correct. There is. I mean, and these are, this is research-based. This
right.
information I'm giving you is empirically studied. It is research-based.
And, but where is this information in the schools, you know, in K through to like where there's a kind of a classes about informing young people about these issues, or even people around who can kind of recognize it and, oh, hey, are you having a hard time focusing today? Just like have this be a part of general education. Because like, what's more important than being able to focus and being attentive in life? This seems, you know, at least as important as arithmetic.
Of course.
Right?
Of course. I mean, that's also like, why didn't we learn to budget or do our finances in school? I mean,
again,
it's at that same caliber of importance, but when we bring that up, we're getting into systemic issues.
I see.
We're underfunded. Our school systems are underfunded. We have teachers who are burnt out, who are making, you know, $50,000 a year, working most of the year from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. I mean, and they're babysitting large classrooms of kids, but it is such a systemic issue of, why aren't we learning these things in school? Why isn't psychology 101 mandatory? That's an elective.
So we haven't gotten to the point as a civilization where we are recognizing emotional and psychological well-being as just something that needs to be a part of general knowledge from childhood on, and recognizing these sensitivities in people.
Yes.
And then you have a whole part of, you know, society or politics that's the opposite, like, toughen up, stop being such a, you know, like, be hard and tough and violent, and that's, so, we're at a very difficult point of humanity when, like, even the conversation about emotional intelligence is considered too woke or radical right. or something like right. Right, yes, right, right, right. So I it's mean, complicated.
Yeah, and I know that we have talked about how cool the internet is in certain ways in terms of like, you know, finding people like us and being able to connect in this way. And there are a lot of problems with social media. There are a lot of problems with TikTok and these platforms because people who don't have licenses, are not doing this for a living, are giving this information that is false, like mental health information mm-hmm. that is false information. And also on the same thing, like the same line, TikTok is allowing people to have a platform. And some people who are not credentialed are sometimes giving this false information or not backed by science or education. But it's also giving a platform for people to learn about mental health and make this more of a household conversation, a conversation that isn't taboo or it's not, what did you say? Like, it's not manly to talk about your feelings, but
it's too woke or something.
It's too
right.
woke. Right. Yeah. This wokeness thing is, yeah. I think.
Like the bro mentality and yep. be tough and yeah. Right.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. So
this is just a whole nother thing happening in society, which right. makes everything more complicated now because it's not just about educating people about their feelings and
yes.
psychology. Now it's like a whole political issue.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right. yeah. I mean, that's again, I think that, and this is a therapeutic tool, desensitization, which is when you repeatedly, it's mainly used for people with obsessive compulsive disorder, but you have exposure therapy, which leads to desensitization, because once you're exposed over and over again, it becomes less scary or less taboo. See.
And then you accept it more.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is all like it's the DGAF crew. It's the
yes.
men
yes.
don't give a F.
Yes.
Like it's a thing.
Yes.
Like being not feeling.
Right.
But yeah, so I found you on Instagram and I immediately recognized you as someone with wisdom. Mm. And so I reached out. And so I think we can conclude from that the internet isn't purely evil.
Exactly.
At least there's one point of light,
exactly.
Molly Garber. This was a good segue to something on my list. I came up through the New Age and wellness community, and at the time, it was a revelation to me, and it got me into healing and past lives and astral travel and seeing auras and all this stuff, and which I teach that stuff now, all the woo-woo stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
I do. But this community has taken a dark turn lately, particularly since the pandemic, where they've really turned anti-science, anti-media, anti-journalists, anti-reality, anti-fact. It's like these people are living in this unicorn rainbow world, and everybody's a therapist, everybody's a guru, and it's QAnon adjacent, and often anti-Semitic or racist or white supremacist, without them even understanding that
yes.
they're repeating all that stuff.
Yes.
So I'm just kind of aghast at what's happened to my community. It's so much pretending, you know, and people living in their mom's basement who haven't been in a relationship in their life, broke. They take a weekend seminar and suddenly they're an abundance and relationship and sex coach.
Yes.
So it's just like such a joke. And then it becomes mm-hmm. all about marketing and, you know, how many followers. But like there's so much junk
yeah.
and junk science and junk therapy.
Yeah.
It's a big question, but please.
Well, that's it's not rant. A question.
My rant.
That wasn't a question. What do you want to ask me?
Please give me your thoughts.
You know, it's what you're saying is so, it's true and it's valid. And I am open-minded. I have done past life regressions. I have done spirit guide meditations. I've done all of this stuff. I've eaten psilocybin. Sometimes, you know, maybe I still do. But which is a whole other conversation about psychedelics and mental health, which is coming up a lot. But all I'm saying is that there are a lot of people, and I'm seeing more and more this term, quote unquote, coach. And every time I see the term coach, I am full of questions about how they got to quote unquote coach. I have no idea what it means versus somebody who is a licensed clinical social worker, like me, for example, or somebody who is a licensed marriage and family therapist. I know that they have been in higher education, so they have the ability to research correctly. They have the ability to know what they're talking about. They have education behind it. And when you see this quote unquote healer label or quote unquote coach, you don't have that information. You don't know where they got the term healer. You don't know where they got the term coach. You don't know where they came from. And so it's sort of like, how do you even know you want to spend your money on that? Like, that also baffles me. How are people hiring coaches and healers without knowing anything about them or where they came from? Or their skills.
And then it comes down to people who are good at marketing or very charismatic, but right. They may be total frauds.
Right. Right. The marketing. You brought up marketing. What you're seeing a lot of with these quote-unquote healers, these quote-unquote coaches, is the marketing. People are buying the personality. People are buying the dream that they market. And that's what is keeping them going, is people buying into that. They're buying into the dream or they're buying into the personality. But we as therapists, we're not trained to market ourselves. Mm. We go to school for 7 years, 8 years, and we learn all the ins and outs of how your upbringing affects you, how trauma affects you, what it means to be culturally competent. Mm-hmm. We learn the ins and outs of everything. But we don't take a single class on marketing.
Mm.
And so you finding me on social media is actually shocking because I'm not in it to market myself. I'm not giving like self-help quotes that are like, you could be powerful someday, and quoting myself. Like, I'm laughing about how we're all a little broken and wanting to be better and grow and sharing that that's normal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's important we have this discussion about who can really help and who is just putting on this front, which how much of it is performative or just somebody, hucksterism, new age hucksterism.
Yes.
It's just, I don't know when my religion went so off, but it's really so much about grifters these days and just BS. But you've used the word normalize a few times. And so let's wrap things up by exploring this notion. Well, you're talking about normalizing empathy, mm-hmm. normalizing, you know, checking in with yourself. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap it up with these ideas a little more.
Yeah. And, that's actually a really beautiful way to wrap this up. Because when children are raised in environments where, say, for example, they're crying and their parent slaps them on the wrist and says, stop crying. That is the opposite of normalizing. Whereas if you meet that child with empathy and curiosity of, what are you feeling? What's coming up for you right now? What does support look like for you? What does comfort look like for you? That's normalizing. Yeah. And when people don't have that, children, adults, teenagers, we're led to believe that what we're feeling is crazy. Mm. And that's where that repression comes in that we were talking about earlier. That's where we start to go within, into our own private, isolated worlds and cope however we need to make peace with this idea that we're not normal. Mm. And that is the root of so many mental illnesses. So much of it is just people who haven't been told that their feelings are okay.
So they end up feeling isolated. This is my problem. Nobody knows me. Nobody understands me. Instead of somebody coming along in third grade and like a teacher going, oh, I noticed that you get a little triggered when things get, when too many people are around you. Like somebody noticing these things and giving you like, oh, this is just natural things we all deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah, a normalizing empathy.
Yeah.
Okay, let's start that religion.
Yeah. I am all about that. That is a church I will join or a synagogue I will join. And that's, you know, Pete, that's why I'm just so grateful to have been here today, because the ability to share this information freely and the ability to just let people know that it's, they don't have to be isolated. They don't have to be alone.
That's it.
It's just about learning and teaching. That's what life is to me.
Molly Garber Therapy on Instagram.
That's it.
And MollyGarberTherapy.com.
That's it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
In psychology, there is a category of coping called emotion-focused. According to the National Library of Medicine, this form of coping aims to reduce negative emotions associated with a problem. Examples of this style include positive reframing, acceptance, turning to religion, and/or humor. Now, most who know me know that humor and creative expression are my primary coping tools. A perfect example of this was when I was lovingly guilted last year by my Jewish relatives to give a speech at my grandmother's memorial. After speaking, a flood of grieving people, both of whom I knew and did not know, approached me to share that I should make a career pivot into stand-up comedy. The funeral speech went like this. Over a year ago, on February 14th, 2022, I traveled down to Mexico with my father. On the way, I made a pit stop in San Diego to buy a dozen roses, and just a few short hours later, I was in Grandma Lynn's living room in Ensenada with a surprise visit and an important question. "Hi, Grandma," I said. "Will you be my Valentine?" It must have been the shock of my unexpected surprise that made her think I was my father's girlfriend, Julie, but shortly after she realized I was actually her granddaughter waving around a dozen roses, she did, indeed, decide to accept my request and agreed to be my Valentine. Today I am speaking for two reasons. One, because my aunt really wanted me to, and two is because despite my grandmother's very complex personality, she truly never ever failed us as grandchildren when it came to being an amazing and committed grandparent. I mean, who would want to take child-aged me, my sister, and my two boy cousins all at the same time and schlep us around to the Hershey's Chocolate World or the Crayola Factory or the infamous Westside Pavilion Mall for a frozen banana? I understand that this is off topic, but us four cousins were like a pack of hyenas, cackling and causing mayhem the moment we were all together. And Grandma, she didn't care. Now, I'm going to fast forward to more recently when I got the call that Grandma was in the hospital at UCLA. I was told it didn't look good, and I knew I needed to go be with her at least one last time. When I arrived to find my cousin Laura and my aunt Joan in the room with her, she was still in and out of consciousness while we tried to coordinate with doctors to stabilize her comfort levels. Now, I know this sounds grim, but if you guys saw Grandma yelling, quote, "up the morphine," when her doctors walked in, you would definitely be finding this funny too. So, anyways, once the doctors decided to listen and let her party a little bit harder with the morphine, Grandma finally fell asleep. At this point, Laura and Aunt Joan, after an entire day at the hospital, obviously needed to go eat, as us Jews do. It was then that I got a little bit of alone time with Grandma Lynn. As she slept, we held hands. And when I looked down, I noticed her signature coral nail polish strewn across her notoriously delicate and elegant hands. In a whisper, I said, "Grandma," still embracing my inner hyena and quite literally attempting to wake my grandmother while on her deathbed. She opened her eyes ever so slightly and turned to me. Feeling accomplished, I playfully said, and I will censor this for the children, quote, "You may be dying, but your nails look effing amazing." And in a whisper, she responded, "I know," and fell back to sleep. Now, after a while, Laura came back to the room and we had a visit from a spiritual liaison with UCLA, who was sent to say a Jewish prayer over her as our requested rabbi seemed to be unavailable. Grandma was totally out at this point, but my cousin and I looked at each other, shrugged our shoulders, and Laura said, "I mean, it couldn't hurt, I guess." So, as this sweet lady butchered this prayer in Hebrew, bless her heart, Grandma just laid there in a peaceful morphine sleep. At the end of the prayer, Laura, the stand-in rabbi, and I all said amen. And as the nice liaison lady started to leave the room, my grandmother suddenly awoke ever so slightly to yell, "Shalom!" and fell right back to sleep. For the non-Jews here today, shalom essentially means peace out. And so today, I will leave it at that. Shalom, Grandma.
Boy, boy, is the lady's wrist. Boy, boy, is the solid lift. Boy, boy, is the lady's gift to gators on the avenue. Boy, boy, is the lady's style. Boy, boy, give the beat a try. Boy, boy, put it in your file, and you'll be hip to what's new. If you want to know how it all began, it started in a big brass band. The leader man was sad indeed, until his little gators all began to read. Boy, boy, and they grabbed their horns. Boy, boy, and the riff was born. Boy, boy, and they all agreed to play, play, play. Cast their boots, for boy, boy is here to stay. Boy, 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 boy. How it all began.
How did it begin, Daddy?
It started in a big brass band.
Oh, I understand.
The leader man was sad indeed, until his little gators all began to read. Boy, boy, and they grabbed their horns. Boy, boy, and the riff was born. Boy, boy, and they all agreed to play. Play, play, and they cast their boots. The boy, boy, is here to stay. Boy, boy.
Take.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. Today's show featured the multi-talented Molly Garber. First, I interviewed her about her work as a therapist, then a tune she sings on called Shoe Drop with the band Urchard, then a story by Molly Garber, then Boink Boink by Slim Gaylard, master of jive talk, and we just wrap things up with an unreleased song by Jacob Loeb, Remedy. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with the best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out! Ooh.